Welcome to UberCube, the podcast where we discuss all things cube, but with refreshments. This is your host, Anthony Adams, a.k.a. UberBear, and today I'm joined by my other amazing host.
Hi, it's me, May, also known as Magic.
Amazing. Let's put the emphasis on the amazing. I'll be here all week. And you? Stu, hi. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Stu's full of dad jokes today.
I'm a father. I can get away with that.
We're just reading all the dad jokes on Reddit. So we've got an, as we always say, a truly interesting, very Western-driven, would you say, episode? A little reminiscent of some of our films that I personally enjoyed. I being an actual Western fan, movie aficionado, I like to term myself. But we got a little bit of lead up here that we want to kind of talk about that really ties in to this Outlaws of Thunder Junction editions that we're going to kind of talk about for each one of our cubes. Do you agree? That's right. Mm-hmm. So before we kind of even dive into that, we're going to do the thing that we have been doing for the last couple of months, and our listeners are like, oh my gosh, would you please, for the love of God. So the UberCubeathon, aka the UberCube event, is happening on April 27th, which is like from the day of recording, T-minus 8 days and counting.
That's right.
And we are going to be doing this in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And we're going to have 64 players competing over 11 cubes. It's going to be a great day. We're looking forward to it. May, you're flying in, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be bringing the fake cube. It's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, we got you on the number two round. You're going to be getting in there. Some of that action is going to be fun.
Yeah, you better be good.
You better get fast. You're like, these are goblins. No, these goblins are going to kill you. It's going to be fantastic. Yeah, we're actually doing this for the joy of cube and spreading it. We are doing this for zero profit because we just wanted to, A, support our local LGS, and B, just have people come into the fold of cube, learn about the diversity of cube and what it can be, right? I love me some MTGO. I truly do. I think it's fantastic. And it's a great benchmark for what cube can represent. But then if you go to the other benchmark, our good friend CubeCon, that has shown us that there is such a diversity of cubes out there in the world, right? And that players and curators can express themselves in forms of art and make all these different types of cubes, whether it be the Fey Cube or the Fem Cube or the Turbo Cube.
I think that's a good point that you mentioned, right? Because maybe, and I kind of hope that this is the case, that maybe there's people out there that look at, you know, when you mention the Modo Cube, I think is a great example, right? It can be a little bit intimidating, a little bit daunting, especially if you're a newer player. It's all very combo-y and control-y and quite complicated, to say the very least. So now you've got an opportunity to play some cubes that are a little lower down on that complexity scale, if you will. Not to say that all of these cubes are just going to be, hey, play creatures and turn them sideways and win. But there's going to be such, like you say, a diversity of archetypes and cube types and all that kind of stuff. Just really give people a great idea of what's potentially out there. And hopefully, as you know, reason why we do this podcast is to bring more attention to cube and to put it out there to the rest of the Magic community.
Before we go any further down this conversation, we're going to do the thing that we always do here at UberCube, and we're going to enjoy our libations of the show. May, what are you having on this delightful Friday afternoon?
So, I am actually going for another non-alcoholic choice this time, and I'm having some English tea with cream and sugar.
How about yourself there, Stu?
What do you think I'm drinking, you varmint? I got me a coffee hidden porter.
Before refrigeration was invented.
No ice in this one.
Why does your voice do this?
Okay, well, why is it always the Brits who can get the American accent just right?
I know, right?
It's always the Brits.
It's always the Brits.
Sometimes Australians.
It's my talent as well. Come on. I've got the deep voice down.
Yeah. And I'm having
Mio. That was great.
What are you drinking today?
You sound like the movie guy. I'm having
In a world.
In a world.
One podcast.
Having a voodoo ranger.
Cube.
Imperial IPA.
Speaking of movies. Yeah. How about we talk about some of your favorite westerns?
I am, because this is what inspired this episode. And we really want to do some very light touch upon ideas as we talk about our favorite westerns versus how the Outlaws of Thunder Junction represented these films. Some of these Academy Award winning films, right? Mm-hmm. So in this case, we're going to talk about the first one. This is one of my personal favorites. It is The Magnificent Seven, which is including Yul Brynner. Yul Brynner, right?
Yul Brynner.
Oh my goodness, like Ten Commandments, just an absolutely house of a star. Charles Bronson from like Death Wish.
Death Wish, yeah.
Steve McQueen. The Blob, which is not a great film. James Coburn.
Of all of Steve McQueen's movies, I should not reference that one, right?
It's not Blob, really. It's not fair to Steve's work. James Coburn, Eli Walsh, and Hortz Bolschwitz. I mean, just talking about like the Traveling Wilburys, right? The super cast. Could you imagine what it took for Hollywood producers to get all of these just amazing, talking about S-tier actors of the time to come together and make? You had to call it the Magnificent Seven. They had no way out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty all-star cast. It's got Robert Vaughn in it as well. And Robert Vaughn is a big favorite of mine. But yeah, this was a top-to-bottom classic as far as the movie, the cast, everything. Very good.
We're referring to the 1960 rendition. Yes, not of this, the 2016. Not the Chris Pratt Denzel, which they did the film justice, but it just did not have that shine and glitz that it had. But Stu, you want to talk about this next film? This is another one of my favorites, and I think it's one of yours as well.
It's 100% one of mine. So this is the modern classic, if you will, Western, and it's Tombstone, Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer. I mean, what's to say? I mean, I think everybody's kind of, you know, if you've never watched any other Western movie other than this movie, I think it will give you an appreciation for just Westerns and the style of movie, the style of everything that sort of encompasses how those movies were made, how they were acted, how the men and the ladies like conducted themselves, how violent it could be.
It was violent.
And maybe one of the most quotable movies of all time, I would say, like, I'm your Huckleberry. That's just my game.
I was thinking the whole time you're talking, I'm like, I just really want a Huckleberry beer now. I don't even know if that exists, but I feel like I ought to get one.
And Val Kilmer in maybe one of his greatest performances. My gosh. You know, just what to say.
I mean, what's to say about that? If you haven't seen that movie about Val Kilmer, go watch that. It's on Amazon.
And it's got Sam Elliott.
Oh, yeah. Kurt Russell.
Michael Biehn, Dana Delaney, Bill Paxton. Rest in peace.
Why did you put her in charge? Aliens, no best alien, film ever made.
I was going to say, no Aliens references here, please.
Then we got another one. This is an Academy winning film as well. This is Unforgiven. If you have not seen Unforgiven, I was just pitching this to May. It's not your typical Western.
It's still a top five Western, though. I think.
Oh, my
top
gosh.
10, maybe.
It is a drama piece. Yeah. Acting, just Clint Eastwood, Gene Hackman, Morgan Freeman, Richard Harris, Francis Fisher. I mean, it is just, oh my gosh. It won the 1992 Best Picture.
It did.
This really sculpted that idea, removing.
And I would say it's kind of, I would still classify this as a modern Western as someone like when I was a kid and we only had three TV channels. On a Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, a lot of the old 1960s spaghetti westerns would be on the TV, right? So Fistful of Dollars.
Good, Bad, the Ugly.
Good, Bad, and the Ugly, which is absolutely one of my favorites.
Outlaw Josie Wales.
Like, yeah. So many of those. Like,
that was Steve McQueen, if I'm not mistaken.
You know what?
I think so.
I've gone through my periods. This is very off topic. I've gone through my phases of like going in and watching, like pick a director. So like all those Sergio Leones, I need to go back.
Absolutely.
And just crank them all out. Like I went through my Alfred Hitchcock days of like just watching everything by him. I need to go and do like a hardcore week of just nothing but those old spaghetti westerns.
Absolutely. That's everything. My favorite thing to do.
Great stuff.
Clint Eastwood, directed, produced, etc. Also ties into May's favorite.
Yeah. Did you happen to know that Clint Eastwood also had a star appearance in Rango, of all things? So I've only watched like a handful of Westerns with my grandmother. So when it comes to my palette in this genre, it's kind of just few colors. But generally my favorite is Rango. So
that's Johnny choice. Depp is a lizard,
Johnny
right?
Depp, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, lizard guy.
something I wanted to bring up, right? So we talked about, remember when the Lord of the Rings set came out?
Right.
I don't know if this is, it's not going to have the same impact, right? But when Lord of the Rings came out, there was a lot of commentary about how that set could potentially divert a lot of attention from Lord of the Rings fans, like, hey, maybe instead of watching the trilogy every weekend, like, you know, I got some Lord of the Rings fanatics in my friend group, right? And in my family members as well. Like, how about instead of one weekend, don't watch the trilogy like three times? Maybe come and play some magic, right? You've got all these cool cards. You can play with the One Ring, you can play with Bilbo, you can play with Frodo. Do you think there's any possibility that a Western style set of Magic the Gathering could have any impact whatsoever on Western movie fans, right? Because there's a lot of them out there. Like Clint Eastwood, just by himself, is so iconic in that space, right? So to me, it seems that there's got to be a less than zero number of people out there that could be like, hey, Magic, I mean, I'm into strategy games and I really love Westerns, and maybe this is a little foray that I could do as a tabletop card game.
Yeah, and I think they did a good job. They went to the lighthearted side, because you look at the Western tropes and the brutality and the mistreatment and horrific treatment of the indigenous peoples and the gold rush and the capitalism and all the things that are just bottled up, and the railways being produced and everything about the Western reflecting
greed.
On America as far
greed.
As the expansion itself.
It was so unbelievably greed-driven.
And it's also one of the most requested sets in Magic's history. People wanted to see this forever, right? Yep. Like, mm-hmm. this is something people asked. But you can imagine how game developers have to now tiptoe through all of this history that's based on brutality. Mm-hmm. There's a lot involved there in greed, and there's good, and there's bad, and there's ugly, and there's pioneers.
There's no washing that out.
You can't get rid of
there's
it,
There's no
right?
sugarcoating
So
it.
What do you do to solve that? You put cowboy hats on everyone and call it a day.
Why are the characters here? Who knows? Who cares?
I don't there know. You go. I'm your Huckleberry.
It feels like the set is a beach episode, but it's half the beach.
Well, they did the card. We didn't talk about it. They did the one of the tropes they did. It was Holy Cow, right? That was a card.
Whoever
came
named
up.
That card.
It caused all kinds of congrats. Conversations. But why did they not just make a Huckleberry? That would have been fantastic. Just oh, my God.
It should have been a legendary creature as well. Huckleberry. Space Berry. Comma, I'm your
creature type.
Fight target. It's got to have a fight ability in there as well. You know.
Yeah, it says at the bottom, everything's okay.
Yeah, partner as well. For the
yeah,
commander
they leaned in a lot of partner. The tropes. Some of the flavor text really built this world. Yeah. It was an interesting world to build. So that's going to be what I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask a very direct question. May, overarching, did you like the theme of this set?
I think thematically I'm going to get some flack possibly for saying this, but it has a similar vibe and tone to the Unfinity set in a way. But like, on the other hand, it does feel like that they've introduced a lot of cool mechanics and whatnot, but I think the most egregious sin is not why didn't they just reprint Horsemanship? Duh.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about it. I was hoping that no one was going to bring that up during this recording, because I've tried to champion that on more than one occasion, that horsemanship just seems to be forgotten. I'm not happy about it. If anyone from Wizards of the Coast, design team, whatever, listening, please do the world a favor. Horsemanship needs you.
Our friend Bill was losing his mind as spoilers are coming out. He's like, for the love of God, when are you just going to give me a train? Just one train. It was like one of the last cards that they talked about. But he was just blowing up our Discord the whole time. Like, I'm not looking at this set until they give me a train, because he wants to build like a train commander deck. He's been working on it forever. And I, too, actually have an interest in trains.
I respect it.
Yeah. So let's talk about our cube additions. We've done enough kind of roasting of the set, and we have our things about it that make sense and things that don't make a lot of sense.
We're not going to roast the set. We're going to talk about it positively.
Yeah, you just put a cowboy hat on, and here we go.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
So my powered vintage cube, and not all of these I've officially introduced into it, but we're coming up on the Uber Cube event, and I was able to get some of these cards shipped in pretty quick from Star City Games, which is like right around the corner type thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of talk about some of these cards that I've added and really get your perspective, because we had a kind of the other day we were driving up to the local LGS and Stu and I, you know, killing some time, 50 minutes. We're going to chat about some of these cards I'm adding to my power cube and what you thought about them. And the first one, it was Slick Shot Show Off from one colorless and a mountain. You get a creature, bird, wizard, cowboy, I guess. I don't know. Whether you just could be. Creature. Anyways, a 1/2 flying.
That's not
haste.
A creature type. There's
it's
no.
Not.
It can't be bird wizard.
Cow. Bird wizard. Cow person.
Cowboy.
Whenever you cow cast person. A non-creature spell, Slick Shot Show Off. That's so hard to say. Gets +2/+0 until the end of turn, and then plot. I love plot, and I'll explain why. But plot just cool. is such a cool mechanic. And plot is for one colorless and one mountain. You may pay the plot cost, exile this card from your hand, cast it as a sorcery on a later turn without paying its mana cost. Plot only as a sorcery. That's where the haste really comes online here. So the conversation that Stu and I were having, the back and forth was, I said, this is a fantastic pseudo storm payoff.
Right.
Like, as in spellcasters, is it spellcasters? But in addition to, it says keyword, non-creature. So you could technically storm off and have this as a secondary in a storm deck. And you were deliberating with me saying that you would never even...
I wouldn't, because typically my storm decks, and especially if you look at the scope of availability when it comes to storm cards in the Vintage Cube, I could build you a lot of decks, very, very storm-specific cards that are in there, and none of the cards that I'm going to put in are going to be creature-based payoffs like this one. I'd rather have counter spells, I'd rather have hand disruption, I'd rather have mana acceleration. There's too many different things that I would rather have, rather than just, hey, here's a creature that is only good. Because you know what? When you go off, you're going to win. I don't want to win with a bird. I want to win with tendrils. I want to win with brain freeze. Like, that's what I want to win with. This is like a sweet, if you will, like little alternative. But I also don't want to pay two mana like early on. Do you get that? Like, well, I don't want to pay two mana even in the first turn or two to plot this. I want to cast Thoughtseize. I want to cast Faithless Looting. I want to cast other spells rather than this.
My counterpoint was that was what May, directing this towards you, is Tendrils of Agony sometimes suffers in the modern storm. I'm running it right now versus Brain Freeze, which is coming out ahead currently in my cube.
Well, it's a better win con.
It's a better win con. I don't see any problem with putting this out for plot, adding to the storm count later. Think of putting it on layaway.
I think you're trying to put it into the wrong deck. And I say this as somebody who loves spell slinging. Spell slinger decks are like my favorite archetype. It is my favorite thing to draft. It's my favorite thing to put together. When I look at this card, I'm looking for things like Monastery Swift Sphere. I'm looking for kind of that mono red package, if you will, where I want to get like a bunch of that cheap interaction with like lightning bolts and whatnot. I want to get things like Dragon's Rage Channeler. I want those. And that's this bird I'd put into that deck.
Yeah, I think
I'd put this into a prowess deck.
I would put this into a spells matters, fine. A mono red or a red blue aggro deck, or even a red X aggro deck. I'm putting this in there. I'm not putting it into a storm deck. And I like this card. I think it's a cool card. I think +2/+0 for any non-creature spell is really, really easy to get off. In fact, I'm less concerned about the plot aspects of it, because I'm kind of thinking, I want to get this thing down as soon as possible. Like, yeah, okay, sure, I'll protect it. Like, play it on turn two, and then we just leave it, and then turn three. All right, let's put it out there, and then let's cast a bunch of spells, and then let's swing it in for, like, 5 or 7 damage. Like, that would be incredible. And I think it's very powerful.
Yeah, I'm looking at it from an ancillary component. I understand. You're both right. Like, it matters. It's a red burn, 100%.
Yeah.
But then I'm looking at it as... at a 540, where I only have two components for Storm, and I were drafting Storm, Tendril specifically, I wouldn't be ashamed to put this in the pocket, is what I'm saying. As a secondary get-in-there component.
I mean this respectfully. Skill issue. Moving on.
I don't know. All right, when you come down for the Uber Cube event, May.
Anthony's going to try.
I'm going to try so hard to make this fire.
Hello, high water.
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
He's going to build a brain freeze deck with Slickshot Show Off and make it work.
All listeners, right. I would like some inclusion in this conversation. I do realize that mine is literally like Plan C. I'm not going to sit here and defend this. I'm not going to die on the hill. You're both right in the traditional archetype sense. Mm-hmm, I'm saying supplementary, this card does have a role to play whenever you're trying to get additional damage on top of Tendrils with the plot ability on there, kind of get towards your storm count.
It would have been interesting if it had whenever you cast or copy a non-creature spell.
That would be gross. Yeah, that would be. They wouldn't put that in here. It would have to be super mythic at that point.
I'm always looking for overpowered stuff.
So I want both of your opinions on this card. I've been staring at it. I actually haven't added it, and I want to know if I need to add it before the event. The cuts are a nightmare. We'll talk about that post-show. But Duelist of the Mind for one colorless and an island. You get a creature human advisor, star three, so whatever you cast, it'll explain that in a minute. Flying Vigilance. Duelist of the Mind's power is equal to the number of cards you've drawn this turn. Whenever you commit a crime, committing a crime is literally borderline any interaction in Magic. It's insane. Correct. It's nuts, right? I'll have to explain that. But you may draw a card. If you do discard a card, this ability triggers only once each turn. So you get like one scooter interaction, if you will, right? I could see this, though. It says whenever you draw with a draw seven where it's an individual, like a Wheel effect. Am I interpreting this card incorrectly? So if you do a Wheel of Fortune or you do something like a Shield Druid deck, could you see running this in a draw seven type of deck? Am I reading the card wrong?
Yeah, because you're not committing a crime when you do a draw seven.
Yeah, but its power is equal to the number of cards you've drawn.
Oh, you're talking about it from a power perspective.
It is an insane kill spell that goes on top of Shield Druid.
Okay, you're just talking about them now.
It's a very tempo-based, also defensive because it has vigilance, so you get to hold it up.
Right.
But you can attack him with this card, and I've been staring at it for a while trying to figure out what am I going to cut for this card.
Don't stare at this card any longer.
Not a fan?
First of all, congratulations. So to anyone that's not aware, this is Nathan Stoyer's World Championship card, right? So congrats to Nathan, 28 World Championship. This card is bananas. It needs to go in your cube. Don't look any don't think again. Buy it, put it in. First of all, you've already got it. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks. Great discussion. And the next card, just kidding. No, this card is really, really, really good, right? Again, whenever you commit a crime, it's so easy to commit a crime in Magic by targeting your opponent or your opponent's permanence. The ability to be able to do the draw and discard is really, really cool.
Count towards this. Exactly. Interactions. Yeah, it's
right.
Pretty nice.
So, thought seizing your opponent or destroying a creature or whatever the case may be is targeting this. For me, this is an absolute no-brainer. I think this card's great.
Do you think it's better than Ledger Shredder?
Absolutely not, but that actually does segue to what I wanted to say, that it does feel like a side-graded Ledger Shredder. It would go into the same deck, fill a similar niche, and it is just a very good card for just moving through cards to dig for your answers.
Going back to that, though, the front gets big. The back half, you're back in your Slickshot deck.
Right.
You're doing burn spells. Mm-hmm. It now becomes problematic because it does die to all the bolts, literally. So it's very vulnerable in that sense. But I think
if you're losing a 2-mana creature to a bolt, then, you know.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. The trade-off is well worth it. You both agree?
Yeah.
Add it? All right. I'll look at it.
No question.
No, absolutely.
Cutting Ledger Shredder today, May?
No, do not cut Ledger Shredder. I will bite your ankle.
Yeah, okay, cool. I like it. So it's an interesting thing here, though. So this is going to go back to one of my learning points where we talk about this next card. As we go through these additions, I've kind of really listened to a lot that May does with her cubes. We have other curators in our group, not to call you out or anything, but that do massive changes, right? Like they just unsettle their entire environment regularly. Like a set comes out, and they add 10, 15, 20, 30
Listen,
cards.
No. Don't call them out like that, okay? We like
diversity. Right,
Bill. We love Bill. And if you want to change 70, 80 cards in your cube at one time, then you have the right to do so.
You
okay?
do. You do.
Much love.
But I like doing these micro changes and these little tweaks because if you think about it, like if you got a good thing going, with the massive volume of set releases we've had as of late, as a curator, it's very difficult to just keep doing all these change-ups. May you understand this? I understand this. The only time that I will do like a massive like footprint change, large scale, is when we visit a plane that just so happens to follow the entire like central theme. Like if we went back to Lorwyn, you'd lose your mind, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I'm so excited for when we do.
Yeah, so it kind of falls in that to me. Like anything I go to, anything that's Mirrodin-esque, right? Anything that's Metalcraft, then I'm going to have significant changes in my cube. But when they release these kind of cowboy hat, weird thematic cubes, I'm sure there's a curator out in this world right now that's just like, this is what I've been waiting for. This is my moment. This is my time. But for me, this is a very like microcosm of changes, right? I'm just going to do little ones, which leads me to my next discussion that I had with Stu. And this is a really weird one. And I'm trying to understand this one. And I think I've got deduced the lore here. Probably not. Probably got this wrong. But Vaultborn Tyrant for 5 colorless and 2 green, you get a 6/6. dinosaur, trample, whenever Vaultborn, Tyrant, or another creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 3 life and draw a card. When Vaultborn Tyrant dies, if it's not a token, create a token that's a copy of it, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. Again, going back to the Stu and I are taking the road trip to the LGS.
We did.
And I just was discussing, I chose to cut Gruff Triplets, I believe.
You did. That was the card you mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, which is typically like a flash component for this. And my argument for adding this card is if you use this with the card Flash, you can essentially get the 6/6 Trampler, draw 2 cards, and gain 6 life off the ETB and LTB.
Correct.
Versus Gruff Triplets does the thing where it puts counters distribution on multiple cards.
Yes.
And you said you weren't a fan of either of these cards.
I don't completely dislike either of them, but for me as a player, this is kind of low down on my list of targets that I'm really looking for if I'm like sneak attacking or, you know, through the breach, for as an example, right? I'm looking for something that has a little bit more impact. Not that this doesn't have impact, and you're absolutely right. Gaining 6 life and drawing a couple of cards is actually very, very powerful. I just don't know if I want this more than I want Archon of Cruelty or a Traxa or a Tali. Or, you know, there's a host of, and obviously you're talking about this from a vintage queue perspective, right? So there's at least right now a good 4 or 5 other targets that I am going to struggle to value this over. I'm not saying it's a million miles away, but I'm saying I think I just value those cards a little bit higher than I do this. This might sound crazy. If this was 6 mana, I think it would be playable.
Let me ask you a question, May. Removing Natural Order and all these Green Sun Zenith and all these cheaty effects. Mm-hmm. Looking at this with the fact that it says it's an artifact, I also secondarily considered this, putting this in my artifact cube. What do you think about
that? I think that is an extremely cute reason.
Yeah, okay, that's what
it's a stretch.
That was his response as well, too.
It happens to say artifact, okay?
Yeah, I wanted to get her opinion,
the secondary part's an artifact, though.
Yeah, it's a real reach. Stu's already convinced me, but I wanted to see what you had to say unbiased.
I really love this card. I think that it is exactly the type of card that green needs when it comes to big, stupid thing that has value retention. And you kind of have to ask yourself as a curator when you're assessing cards like these, does this actually fit a particular niche in my environment that another card doesn't fill or that needs to be filled? So when I'm looking at this card, I am asking myself, okay, if somebody's going through their route in order to say big mana ramp and this is their big target at the end, or going for the sneak attack, going for natural order, whatnot, right? Why would I choose this over, say, Hoof or other big stupid green creatures that just say I win the game with so many other words, right? Cool, great, you got a couple cards and it replaces itself, but it's in the grand scheme of limited. You already have your big stupid creature. You want to be closing the game with the big stupid creature.
Exactly.
So I have a counterpoint to all this because I thought about this, right? I'm going back to you. This is my solid lean in. I'm running a 540 card powered vintage. And it goes back to the not all the components fall into place. It is a limited environment and there are draft situations that occur, right?
Pack one, pick one. I might have an extremely hot take here.
Yeah.
I would almost rather take a Carnage Tyrant over this.
That's the hottest take ever.
Yeah, no,
it's extremely
hot.
That's very hot. I love that.
It's good, but it's also so Carnage Tyrant. The reason why I don't run it is because
Hexproof's not a fun.
Yeah, it's the lack of interaction. It's not. It's a big dumb beater. And as a curator,
but that's exactly what you need it to be. Is my point.
And how many
Carnage Tyrant doesn't give you additional value just for coming down? It's hard to deal with.
It is.
It has trample and it has ways to close the game.
Yeah, and how many targets for that do you want? And how many targets for that are you concerned aren't going to show up in the draft? You know what I'm not going to be mad about? I'm not even going to be mad if I get Primeval Titan, if I've got a natural order, right? If I'm drafting a subset of the cube, which organically is going to mean that unless someone gets really, 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 really lucky in the draft and they've got some magical Christmas land deck, everyone's going to kind of be a bit affected when you're drafting a subset, right? And not everyone's deck has the potential to be absolutely max powered out because you have less of a card pool to choose from. So if I don't get my Gruff Triplets, Okay. If I don't get my Atraxa, okay. But there's other options that are there as well. And for a list that you've been curating this list for a long time, it's pretty optimized at this point. As a drafter, I'm also thinking, I understand that the card pool is going to be less if I'm drafting with six players or it's a larger cube. So now I have to kind of legislate for that. So I'll legislate for it by when I'm drafting green and I've got Natural Order or Fanat, whatever the case may be where I'm trying to cheat something out and I know it's specifically for a green creature. Heck, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go for Primeval Titan and then I'm going to try and get Dark Depths and Thespian Stage. And maybe I'm going to get, go Golgari and try and get Vampire Hexmage as well. So I think there's ways to mitigate the fact that that card pool is going to be a little lower without trying to kind of shoehorn a card in like this, that in a lot of those situations, and especially when the entire card pool is available to the draft, that that's not quite going to be the optimum play in the strategies that it's in there to support.
So I would like to clarify, just in case somebody's already like boiling and steaming through their ears or whatever, that I am not saying that this is a bad card by any stretch. However, I think that the home for it needs to be things like, maybe Live the Dream Cube or environments where cheating this thing into play feels more part of some bigger synergistic package rather than as an individual good card amongst the best cards, if that makes sense.
Yep.
I agree 100%. I agree with everything you're saying. Even when I was adding it, the cuts were kind of rough. They were a little hard. And what I wanted to lean into here is we've got the event coming up in a few days, right? And it's an opportunity to get a little micro, kind of get everybody's opinion of what they thought about it. And Gruff Triplets just simply wasn't really, it's a great card, but wasn't appealing to me as a person. And I just thought this was more dynamic. But it also feels weird. It feels win more-ish. It feels like all the arguments, right? Like you're at 7 mana. Do you really care about drawing cards? You should be closing games in this environment. I get all of that, right? I'm leaning into the flash, the natural order, the cheating it in fast, not sneak attack, not show and tell, but it's still a devastating card that lets you continue to churn through your deck. So there's applications.
If I were to throw this in the fake cube, absolutely not, because flavor, but if this were to go into the fake cube, it would break the environment in half in a lot of ways. There's no way that somebody's going to be able to just outvalue it once it gets down.
Yep.
Even with the adventure cards. And that's kind of where the context matters for what is the card trying to do within your environment. So
we've kind of talked about the Vintage Power Cube, and a good chance you'll see this card and all the cards we talked about show up in Modo at some point, right? That tends to be the lines that happens, and Daybreak Games has done a fantastic job of really testing the threshold. So we'll get to see some action on these cards, and we'll find out the truth be told soon enough at the Ubercube event, at KubeCon, and MTGO. But let's move over to a way cooler cube. And it's going to be the Fey Cube.
That's a bit of a stretch. But as the curator, cooler. I'll give you that.
I love the Fey Cube so much. Have you got any additions from this cowboy yeehaw? Did you put any cowboy hats on anything by chance?
No. Anyways, so when it came to looking at the set, I wasn't expecting to end up with any cards that would fit in my environment, but once again, it feels like that there are these couple cards that are seeded in that feel carefully crafted for me, and I don't know why. But I have my interest particularly piqued with a card called Nurturing Pixie. It's 1 white for a fairy rogue creature. It's a 1/1 of flying, but its body's not super accurate to actually what it is. When it enters the battlefield, you return up to 1 non-fairy, non-land permanent you control to its owner's hand. If a permanent was returned this way, put a +1/+1 counter on Nurturing Pixie.
Ooh.
So this might remind you of things like Glint Hawk, or my immediate comparison was Fairy Imposter in blue, where you are ending up with a 2/2 body that flies in white for 1 mana, plus you can rebounce things that have adventures, or cards like Ichor Wellspring, the miscellaneous packages that we've all been familiar with. I'm considering Nurturing Pixie for the Fey Cube since it's going to be pretty cool for bouncing back at the adventures, it's going to be a fairy rogue, and it also just cares about non-fairies. So
It reminds me a lot when I saw you post this, a lot like Extraction Specialist, which is in the FemCube. When I saw this card, I was actually looking at that one too.
I love that card.
I think it's fantastic.
I love Extraction Specialist.
And I particularly love that interaction between those two cards. If you put both in the FemCube, I think that would be a cool engine to have.
Oh my goodness, I totally overlooked that. And it's got a little cool little cactus baby running around with it too. So it's kidnapping a cactus baby, I don't know. But it's interesting. Did you read the flavor text? Read the flavor text of the card you're talking about. It's so good.
Count yourself lucky I came upon you. This is not a world for second chances.
Clint Eastwood could have said that.
Clint Eastwood would have said that.
This is not a world for second chances.
Why are you the movie guy when you're doing westerns?
Because that's how they all speak, right? It's that's what they sound like. They drop the voice like seven octaves and, yeah. you know,
all baritone.
It's all dramatic. All, yeah,
in a world.
In a world. One pixie.
Which leads
to one permanent. I can smell the dust and musk from here.
The other additions that I had. So I'll tell you actually the cube that I think got the best interaction for what I wanted with was actually Uber Bear's Artifact Cube.
Who's Artifact Cube?
Uber Bear's.
Uber Bear's, okay.
Removing all of the actual cowboy stuff and the lore and... That's what was interesting about this is I had no dog in this race, right? I had nothing to gain from this world. What other curators are salivating because they've been dying to build this entire Western type cube. Me, I'm like, all right, well, there's some very efficient cards in here I can use. And one of them I picked up was Lava Spur Boots for one colorless. Get an artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+0 and has haste and ward 1, equip 1. It was Bone Splinter-esque, kind of did what I wanted to do. I'm in love with Ward. I like the fact you mentioned this earlier when you're talking about, what was it?
We don't need Swiftfoot Boots. We have Swiftfoot Boots at home. Swiftfoot Boots at home.
Swiftfoot at home. Yeah, right. So, and also, Urza Saga actually likes this too. I chose not to put this in my Power Vintage Cube, but could technically Urza Saga this out
you
and
could.
Get some action.
It's not good enough for Vintage Cube. Like,
it's custom, no, absolutely
close,
not.
It's not good enough for Vintage
I don't know.
Cube.
I'm going to lean
but
towards
in the Artifact
cusp.
Cube, it might have a pretty fun home.
It has a home, right? And it does what I want to do. I added cards like Metal Worker, which is probably going to break the environment. Now you can make it hasty, right? Why are we not doing this? But like I thought about it long and hard, and I wanted this to find an environment. I only ordered one. Most Commander players are probably salivating at this card, but I just thought the Artifact Cube was great. Really plays in my equipment.deck. You know, you can kind of lean into that.
Commander players, you think so? I don't know about that. I don't think the Ward 1 is that
relevant. Commander players
have
so many options for boots. Yeah. I think that this is like 4th, 5th. But anyways, we're not here to talk about Commander.
Well, what is the guy that has like 5 pair of boots on or 6 pair of boots on? There is a Commander card that came out.
The new slime guy, yeah.
I'm going to argue that, yes, they are salivating about all the boots just because some
boots deck.
Just because your Commander has 8 legs doesn't mean that you have to put 8 pairs of booties on it. Okay? Just to clarify
that. Giving some people some inspiration in ways that we couldn't imagine.
The next card, though, actually, I was just enthralled with. This is the card that was designed for me. Legion Extruder. 1 colorless and 1 red. You get an artifact. When Legion Extruder enters the battlefield, it deals 2 damage to any target. Then you can pay 2, tap it, sacrifice another artifact, create a 3/3 colorless golem artifact creature token. I've been leaning into like my typal golems and my typal constructs for a while, and this card is just a huge payoff that has a shock. I love this card. I would not be shocked if this showed up in the moto. It'll
in
get
the moto
tested.
What?
It'll get tested on Vintage. It's really good.
I don't think so. I think the 2 to and tap to create a 3/3 is a cute ability that is going to work well in your Artifact Cube. I really do. I think it's a really good addition for that. It's not in the same. It's not in the universe of the Vintage Cube. It's just not. It's way, way, way too slow. But I think in Artifact Cube, I think it works perfect. Because you've got this Golem sub-theme, and I've drafted that Golem deck in your Artifact Cube, and it is hilariously fun. This card having the ability to not necessarily go overboard as soon as it enters, but the ability for it to be able to have an impact when it enters and then have a lasting mana sink ability. I love these kinds of cards. 2 mana to deal 2 damage, I'm about it. Pay 2 and tap it and just start creating 3/3s. Obviously, you got to have a little bit of support with it. But how much fun is that? I love it. I love the card, and I mean, love the artwork.
It makes
as well.
My Jenny brain go burr because I'm like, exactly. Oh, an artifact that deals damage when it enters. How can I loop this?
Yeah, it's going to play into like gut decks. Everything plays into a gut deck.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
So this next, would you mind reading this next one because it has a lot of words on it? May please.
Absolutely. In fact, I think that we should take a second to talk about one of the new mechanics that Q players are absolutely embracing and rejoicing for, and that's Spree. So Spree is kind of like kicker modal cards, and I'm here for it.
Everything's kicker.
So it kind of reminds me of like Entwine in a way.
Yeah.
But you don't actually get it like...
It's the modality aspect, right?
And yeah, it's multiple modes. It's really great. So Requisition Raid is a one mono white, one white pip for a sorcery with Spree. However, you can actually add an additional colorless mana to destroy target artifact, destroy target enchantment, and or put a +1/+1 counter on each target creature target player controls. What I love about cards like these is that the more you get more, the more you pay for it. And when you need just one, then you're getting an okay rate for that one.
100% agree, right? Like, we've talked about this problem with naturalized effects and disenchant effects in my artifact cube and how they're the bane of the environment that's come up a dozen times, right? So I did not record the actual card that I cut for this, but I was very choice in removing a removal spell to replace this with a type of removal spell. And what I liked about this, we were doing our car ride to the LGS, and this is another conversation came up. This is sorcery speed. This is a much more fair version of this removal, right? Opposed to, this would be bonkers.
It is. You've talked a few times about cards that you've planned on putting in your 540 vintage. Now, again, that 540 number means that you've got a lot more equity than like a 360 or a 450, obviously. Of all the cards mentioned, I actually think this is one, if nothing else, but for... I don't even know if I want to relegate it to a sideboard. I think the fact that it is at nothing else, one white and one colorless in a mono white, like hate bears / aggro deck, to put +1/+1 counter on every creature that you have, or just pay that extra and destroy an artifact or enchantment. This to me, I love cards like this. It's very, very straightforward. There's no gimmicks about it, right? There's no setup that's necessary. It's just going to be very, very likely this card is going to be good 90% of the time. I will say that because you're very, very likely when you're playing Modo, if you are playing that mono white deck, you are probably going to be playing against someone that either has, if you've got nothing else, but you just want to buff your creatures, it costs 2 mana, job done. But then only 1 mana more to destroy that Urza Saga or destroy whatever the artifact is that's causing problems, Mystic Forge, Portal of Phyrexia, whatever it is. This is the card that does it and has the other benefit. I love, love, love this card. Sorcery Speed, it kind of has to have that.
I like this more than Legolas's Quick Reflexes, even though
Legolas's is really good, though.
It's really good.
Legolas's is really good.
I mean, Combat Cubes just rejoiced over this card. This is nuts.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, sure. Plus one counter on each creature, not up to one, not up to two, on each creature. Yeah, sure, it might only be two creatures. It might even be one creature, but I think having that is really, really good.
Yeah, I'm leaning into it for more of the modular type aspect / removal because it's a whole thing in my cube. So I can see that. I even have some proliferation effects.
This next one, I think, this is one that I'm probably the most excited about specifically for your artifact cube.
So I have not ordered.
I'm going to take this one. So this is Sandstorm Salvager. 2 colorless and a green creature, human artificer. When it enters the battlefield, you get a 3/3 colorless golem artifact creature token. Then you can pay 2 and tap it to put a +1/+1 counter on each creature token you control. They gain trample until end of turn.
I love it.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
That's exactly the kind of card that I want for a golem deck.
Yes.
And at worst, you're still going to feel good if you end up with just like a green pile. Love it.
And I did not order one because it was expensive as all get out. So.
Well, no.
I'm pre-release.
Let's be real here. What was expensive about this, Anthony?
It was up there getting close to the 30s and 40s at one point.
Because of?
Of foiling.
And if you didn't?
Yeah. That's a whole other episode.
Yeah.
But then the LEDs PSA, don't matter.
PSA. Don't feel the need to foil all of your cubes. Some people are going to be like, that's blasphemy. How dare you say that? But Anyway,
but seriously though, and like a lot of these spree cards, I have not seen a single spree card that I'm just kind of feel bad about. All the spree cards feel like that they'll end up in some homes for cubes.
100%.
Easily one of my favorite mechanics.
So I have to pick up Sandstorm. I'm going to try to order it this week, see if I can get it in time. But this next card, I'm going to pass this off to... I'm going to actually pass this off to May.
Yeah, so I was going
to
say, this
we
is
talked
May
about
card.
This during the Femme episode.
This is very much of a me card, so I appreciate it. Three Steps Ahead is a one blue instant, once again with Spree, and you can pay one and a blue to counter target spell. Its floor being a cancel, I'm already here for it. You can also pay three colorless to create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, or just pay two to draw two and discard a card. Oh, oh, all of those modes are so good. I love it. Everything about this card just has me salivating. All the options. And especially when I can hold on to a card that is a counterspell, but once it stops being relevant on the stack, then I can get value out of it. Yes, please.
I think that's an amazing, amazing point that you just brought up, right? These modality kind of cards, right? Where it's a card like this, cancel at home, right? Okay, mm-hmm. Perfect. I can leave up a cancel. Every time you've got... Then I've got plus two extra mana with this in my hand. Okay, now I can draw two and discard one. Or I've got another mana. Now I can create a token. So it just gets better and better and better every single turn that this card is in your hand. And even if nothing else, it's just three mana to counter a target spell. That by itself is enough for me to want to put this in any deck that... Like I can't wait. Like I want to put this in. I want to get that kind of, you know, three times the value from one card. I love it.
It's three things that I'm looking for as a blue player.
Yes,
and it's once, twice, three times a lady.
I'm also like, we don't talk about this very often. I have my little Mizzix commander deck that I play about once every 4 or 5 years. I don't know how the whole spree thing, but I'm going to assume that if I've got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, let's say 6 counters on myself from my Mizzix, and I can just pay 2 blue and do all of the above.
We're going to put that one out to bones because we'll find out the correction on that one. We're going to ask a judge on that one. Yeah, for sure. Because I think it's interesting.
It's an additional cost, right? Any cost reduction
is going
to apply to that.
It is an additional
cost.
It is not like kicker, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Bones, shout out to Bones. Bones, we're going to have to get back. Hit us up on the Discord. Let us know if we got this
wrong.
Bones is going to
be supportive of me. Yeah. I know it. I know
just
it.
Just hope and pray. We got this, Bones.
All right, let's move. So originally, right back in the origins of this episode, we talked about trains. Now
we talked about Bill wanting trains.
We did. And listen, I'm going to, I kind of, you know, gave Bill a bit of a hard time about his 70 to 80 to 90 changes in his cube that he likes to make. Much love, Bill. He's a tuner. He's trying to make his cube work as best he can. Trains.deck. I've drafted this Trains.deck.
And the Monopoly absolutely, has a trains.deck.
It was absolutely devastating. I didn't drop. I think I dropped one game where I flooded out. And I played like 4 games with this deck and when we drafted that cube. This one might be my favorite.
You know what actually bothered me so much about this, though, is it's the Monopoly based on the Monopoly board game with some realistic, like, artistic stretches, right? There's not 5 train stations on a Monopoly board. I now have 5 locomotives in the Monopoly.
This is where your creative license comes in.
Yeah, I put it in there, but because actually whenever the... let's go ahead and do it.
So this is Luxurious Locomotive. For 5 colors, you get an artifact vehicle, 6/5. That's juicy. Whenever Luxurious Locomotive attacks, create a treasure token for each creature that crewed it this turn. That by itself, I'm like salivating about. Crew one. Activate only once each turn.
Oh.
Oh, no. Which, look, you kind of have to do that because you can't just have it crewed like 10 times with all of your dorks and tokens and whatever and just create a billion treasures. So you understand why that limitation was put in there, right? But even if you just crew this with 2 or 3 creatures.
You just need like 2 Ringos.
2 Rangos?
No, Ringo.
2 Ringos?
Mm-hmm. Never mind. Dad joke didn't land.
Okay.
Ringo Starr, man. Come on, work with me here a little bit. You're killing me. Ringo Starr.
Musician, songwriter, Ringo Starr.
I mean, yeah, I know Ringo Starr.
He was the conductor.
He was the Thomas narrator the Train. For Thomas the Train.
Yes.
He wasn't just the conductor. He was the narrator.
Yeah, see? There you go. All right, next one. Move it on. May, would you mind taking on this one, please?
So the next card is Highway Robbery, since apparently that I'm having to steal the segues here in order to make this work. Highway Robbery is one red for a sorcery. You may discard a card or sacrifice a land. If you do, draw two cards. But, more importantly, it has plot for one in a red. Now, I love me plot as a mechanic because it feels kind of like the final version of Foretell in a way. So, I can use this in a lot of my spell slinging decks of I can just plot it now, save it for later, so that way once I start getting into the relevant parts of the game, then I'm just like, okay, now I need to start slamming some spells to get those prowess triggers to set up for my storm or whatever garbage that I want. This moves through cards. This is good setup. This is something that I like a lot, and sacrificing a land, if you're at that point in the game anyways, is just kind of a non-cost.
Well, leaning into the thematic aspects of this card, it's for the Monopoly, and it's Highway Robbery, so I'm like on the nose with what I'm saying here, but the term plot actually leans into the aspects of the game of Monopoly, where you're renting, landing on pieces, owning properties, etc. You're plotting your space within the frontier that you're in, right?
Fires
buying
your houses.
I'm really digging in here, but that's kind of, as a curation standpoint, that's what I'm looking at, right? I'm really trying to lean into the board of Monopoly, so it's interesting.
Is this a treasure chest?
Or it is. There's gold, community silver.
What is it? Community silver chest and what's the other one?
Well, I've got all those represented, too. I've got community chest.
I think it is the perfect type of meta thematic choice.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. So, kind of, let's lean into the final thoughts, right?
We don't do these very often. We don't really review sets. That's never been...
I wouldn't call this a review at
something
the best.
That we've done. It's not, additions? But it kind of... Yeah, but we've kind of reviewed cards on a specific set, right? So, again, I don't want to necessarily call this a set review because we're not going through every card and saying, here's where we like this or don't like this. But I like, from a thematic perspective... Something like this, again, I like the fact that we have something that is a little bit unique thematically in the sphere of magic, where we have a Western-style set, right? There hasn't really been another one.
So we're going to go with, like, Yul Brynner and Clint Eastwood, though. They really don't have an appreciation for what we just did.
I don't know. Clint Eastwood is 93 years of age. He is 93. And,
I don't think that he should be the metric of approval.
No, and he probably doesn't care.
That's a little unforgiving of both of you.
But,
I'm not going to lie.
But, right, that, but this is something that he's so intrinsically like connected with is the Western theme, right? As is Sergio Leone and Lee Van Cleef and all those guys. Now we have something that, you know, for everyone out there that's a fan of that kind of theme, anything Western related, now you have something that's a potential like little draw, like, hey, why not? You get to play with a cube that has cowboy hats and revolvers and, you know.
Next, cube. We're off to space.
Yay.
Yay. 2001 Space Odyssey. Let's go. Black Hole Disney. Let's go. Yeah. So would you mind taking us off to the socials?
So first of all, we'd be remiss to not mention, as Anthony did at the beginning of the episode, the Uber Cube event. It is at the Gathering Place, April 27th, which is going to be in just about 6 days after this episode is released. It's from 9 o'clock a.m. until 9:30 p.m. Goal is 64 players. It's looking like we're going to have about, well, we've got about 30-something tickets sold so far. So if we have to drop it down from 8 to 4, either way, it's going to be a great time. Anthony has a plan. So we're going to have a lot of cubing, all kinds of cool stuff going on. Lots of cubing, lots of magic playing, all that kind of stuff. Prizes, karaoke, the whole nine yards.
Swag.
Swag, absolutely. There's still time to sign up, and we would appreciate, especially, look, if you're on the East Coast, if you're in North Carolina or a neighboring state, you've really got no excuses. Come show up. QR code is in the show notes. Check it out. We'd love to have you come hang out with us and come play some Cube.
In addition, like the price support scales. That's what we kind of trying to allude to here.
$55, but you know what? But,
you know, we have a plan. Like, even if you, like, it's a tournament style bracket,
it'll
be
worth your while.
So as you move through round one, round two, round three, even as a person, if you wash out, we have you moving over to our free play space where we have a Lord of the Rings cube. We have an Innistrad cube. We've got you stocked up for an entire day of cubing. We'll just make sure everybody leaves. They're happy. They got all the cubing that they could possibly.
You're going to have a good time.
Cube exhaustion is real. And then we karaoke.
I'm going to do some karaoke.
I'm doing some karaoke. I'm excited.
I'm gonna,
I know I am.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of activity in our Facebook drafting page, the MTG Cube Facebook group. Anthony, our resident host here and administrator.
Co-admin.
Don't let that go to your head. Co-admin. Go check that out. A lot of cool conversation going on over there.
Assistant to the regional director, even.
Yes. Right? You are the Dwight Schrute of the MTG Cube. Thank you. As always, if you love the show, please go ahead, give us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Really goes a long way to getting the podcast out there to all the Magic and Cube aficionados out there. And if you want to check out, get some bling for your cube, you can go use our altasleeves.com affiliate link, altasleeves.com/ubercube. Get 5% off your purchase. Also at inkedgaming.com/ubercube. Go check them out. Get some playmats, dice bags, mouse pads, all kinds of cool little aesthetics for your cube. You can find us at Twitter at ubercubemtgpod, or you can reach us via email. We are ubercubemtgpodcast@gmail.com. Come check out the Discord. I don't even know if we need to even support it that much anymore. It's so busy. Like, do we want? We're not going to start limiting it.
It's the deck boast.
No, we'll let more. All right, we'll let more. They are coming in for the deck boast.
They are coming in for the deck boast primarily. Yeah.
And as always, our patreon.com/ubercube. Big thanks to all of our patrons and all of your ongoing support. Keaton Schultz, Lord Justice, Chris Singer, Nick LaPointe, Stephen Conifal, Preston, and Sam McKenna. A huge shout out. Much love to you guys. Thank you for keeping the lights on.
Other than that, we're going to say the thing we always say here at UberCube is
happy cubing.
Yeehaw!
Happy cubing.
In a world where cubing happens.